Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Arab Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Arab Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. As the world's attention focused away on COVID-19 and events in Afghanistan lately, China has been quietly working to squeeze and silence ethnic Uyghurs, ethnic Kazakhs, and other ethnic Muslim minorities from China who have fled to Central Asia. They have never been let at peace. Anyway, despite they are no more in China, and every next day we hear new ways of China trying to put pressure on them. The new signs of the pressure points are that the local authorities in Central Asia are increasingly doing China's bidding to silence those activists and even going as far as deporting them back quietly away from the eyes of the people. One of the recent signs is also the deportation of prominent researcher Jean Bonin from Kazakhstan, who have been running a project called Xinjiang Victim Database. In his case, though, since he's not from China, so he could not be sent there. But Kazakhstan's decision to ban him from entering the country is going to seriously harm the project that he was running, highlighting the plight of ethnic minorities in China. And this comes following another horrific allegation that Tajik government is, in fact, is helping Beijing to send Uyghurs to China, where they face detention and often worse. Of course, we all recall the ordeal of another Uyghur activist in Kazakhstan, Serikchan Bilash, who has gone a hell of an experience before he finally skipped Kazakhstan because of his heroic activism on behalf of persecuted minorities in China. So on today's Majlis podcast, we decided to revisit the fate and plight of Uyghurs and ethnic minorities from China who have fled to Central Asia in the face of recent developments. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Nuri Turkel, Commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Mr. Turkel is an Uyghur. Dr. Sean Roberts, Associate Professor and the Director of the International Development Studies at the Elliott School of International Affairs at the George Washington University and the author of The War on Uyghurs. Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Arab Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi, is also with us. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you. It was such a last-minute decision, but appreciate your flexibility to join us in this very important conversation. So speaking of Jean, we all benefited immensely from his database about the persecuted minorities in China, particularly Uyghurs and ethnic Kazakhs there. So he's banned from entering to Kazakhstan for 5 years is very bold step, which is literally, if not the end of the project that he was running, at least it's going to seriously damage this important work. So maybe we can start with you, Sean. How do you read this move by the Kazakh authorities?
Well, it's actually not that surprising. We have to remember that you mentioned in the introduction that the Central Asian states are starting to extradite Uyghurs and others back to the Uyghur region in China. This has been actually happening since the 1990s. In many ways, what has been surprising to me is to see that Kazakhstan has tolerated the advocacy of ethnic Kazakhs from China on the issue of what's happening in the Uyghur region right now. And in particular, that the Kazakh government had allowed this research to be done. In fact, in many ways, we've gotten the most eyewitness accounts of people who've been in internment camps in the Uyghur region from Kazakhstan. So, you know, I think this is kind of the Kazakhstan government showing its position on this issue. And unfortunately for many of the Turkic Muslims in the Uyghur region of China, that position is one that supports the Chinese government rather than the Turkic people of Central Asia.
I certainly have a couple of more follow-ups on Jean, but before that, maybe I could invite you, Mr. Turkel, here. Is there any big picture explanation of that you could think of, the fact that Jean is project. You know, this project was the whole thing that Jean was busy there in Kazakhstan. And as far as his note is concerned that he posted on his Facebook, he's not given any explanation. Is there any big picture explanation? I guess that's the question I have in mind. Is there any big picture explanation that you could think of in terms of...
First of all, thank you so much for putting this program together on this important topic. You know, we all know that through the SEO, through the other bilateral, multilateral engagement, the PRC has been inserting undue influence in the neighboring Central Asian states that have cultural, linguistic, historic ties to the Uyghur people. This is not a news. This has been an ongoing engagement with the neighboring countries that China has been doing. What is new is that they are going after someone like Jean, who is an American scholar, who is doing nothing but to collect evidence, assisting the refugees or the people who have been affected by the ongoing genocidal actions in China, with documentation, interview, providing humanitarian assistance. The only, I think, reasonable way to see this is that because of the growing interest and some policy responses in the Western capitals, And oftentimes, Jean's name comes up because I think it's fair to say that he's largely responsible for the initial attempts to gather reliable information on the victims. This goes way back, 2019-18, when even the Uyghur victims here in the United States were not comfortable, feel safe to come out and testify. And with Jean's help and others' help, the Kazakhs in Kazakhstan testified and met with the reporters. Mm. I involved in a few of those interviews myself.
Very interesting.
So I think this is something that China has been very upset. Mm. And they have been pressuring the Turkic countries in Central Asia. Mm. I'm afraid that we will see more of these down the road because of the new geopolitical environment in Central Asia.
Yeah, certainly. There is an Afghanistan element. We will touch base on that in a bit. Bruce, as a journalist, also please add if you have any thoughts on the decision by the Kazakh authorities, especially the timing of it. And also as a journalist, you know, I have benefited a lot from Jane's work, and also from that perspective, tell us a little bit about what his work was about.
Well, you know, Jean spent a lot of time, and he was in Xinjiang before. He's been a guest on our show a couple times, I think.
Yeah.
So, he's been looking into this research, and of course, he has firsthand experience being over, you know, in a place where it's been happening, and he stayed in Kazakhstan, you know, to interview people who got across into the other country. So, you know, and Sean put it best by saying we probably know more about what's been happening in Xinjiang because of the people that have gotten across into Kazakhstan, and Jean was one of the ones that was recording and chronicling all this. So, I suppose it is kind of amazing that he did it as long as he did. Well, his work was real valuable to people like us. You know, I didn't ever see from Kazakh media or anything that he was really making that many waves. So I'm still kind of surprised that they did this because, of course, you know, we've spoke about Kazakhstan's role in all this before, and they really are walking a tightrope with this one. They don't want to anger their own ethnic Kazakh population or the Kazakhs that have come from Xinjiang and already become Kazakh citizens. You know, and at the same time, they don't want to anger China. And that's why I'm surprised that they actually took this action against Jean in some ways, because it brought a lot of attention all of a sudden to what was going on in Kazakhstan and there's a lot of questions about why the government would do this and why they would do it now. You know, like I said, his research did shed a lot of light on what was happening in Xinjiang, so I suppose we have a reason, but they let him go for a long time.
Mm.
Well, I'm not sure why all of a sudden this was the right time to do that.
Interesting. Also, just one follow-up on that, Bruce. I mean, the fact that he is no more on the ground in Kazakhstan, so what is that going to mean for the future of this project?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak for Gene. He, as far as I know, he's in Kyrgyzstan, so he might still have some possibilities to do this from there. That said, you know, clearly China is already aware of him, what he was doing in Kazakhstan, so running, you know, being in Kyrgyzstan might not help him all that much. It's hard to say. Last I heard, he was going to take a break from this for a little while. I can't imagine that he'll leave it, so but really that would be something that he would be better off answering than I could possibly answer at all, although I said he's put a lot of time into it. It's hard for me to believe he would walk away.
Yeah,
if I could add one thing about this issue, you know, I think it is the first time that Kazakhstan has banned an American scholar from entry to the country.
Mm.
Uzbekistan has done so in the past, but this is the first time I think Kazakhstan has. And Kazakhstan, you know, of course, historically has tried to balance its relations with China, Russia, the U.S., and so it does also, I think, have ramifications for the relationship between Kazakhstan and the U.S. in that sense, particularly if the U.S. is concerned about academic freedom in terms of access to the region.
You know, Sean, it's interesting you said that. The fact that in the Genius case, I mean, he's an American researcher, but earlier we have seen another Uyghur activist, Serikjan Bilash, who have gone through the hell of an experience for just because he was doing type of work that Gene does in terms of people under pressure in China. I mean, I was just wondering if the decision about Gene by the Kazakh authorities is sort of a continuation of what they did with Bilash earlier.
Well, I think in some ways, I think that, this issue has obviously, as Bruce mentioned, has been uncomfortable for Kazakhstan. It's really the one country in Central Asia where I think this issue has touched the country the most, because there are so many ethnic Kazakhs from China in Kazakhstan. And those people came to the country under the invitation of the government as a means early on during independence to shift the ethnic balance in the country. And, you know, I think that they've tried from the beginning to mute this project, which is something, in my experience, Kazakhstan often does with political activists. Kazakhstan tries not to necessarily resort to imprisonment and so on. It tries to mute political opposition activism in any way it can. And so it changed the leadership of Atatürk early on, when they took out Bilash. They pushed Bilash out. I talked to a Kazakh Uyghur who was one of the first people to testify about his experiences in an internment center, Omer Bek. He also was pushed out by the government. He told me, I met him in Turkey shortly after he left Kazakhstan. He told me that the Kazakhstan authorities told him he should leave the country. And so there's been this attempt, and I think, maybe Gene's presence was one of the things that was keeping it going, because the government had already tried to control the ethnic Kazakhs from China living on their territory as much as they could. In some ways, it is a continuation of this. And I've said this many times, Kazakhstan just wants this problem to go away. But unfortunately, this problem is very critical to the future of Kazakhstan. So yeah. I don't think they can just avoid it and ignore it. Mm.
Other than,
if I may add something that need to be discussed, which is the government of Kazakhstan closely engage with the United States government in multiple multiple fronts, including religious freedom, human rights issues, regional security issues. I've been privy to some of those discussions. I recently met top three government officials discussing these very issues. But what we should do, in addition to shine a spotlight on this, tell the Kazakhs to stop interfering in academic work. You know, we've seen this movie before when the Chinese banned American scholars to travel to China because of their academic work and publishing a book. United States was not tough enough, and this is getting worse. So I worry that this will set up a bad precedent. That if the Kazakhstan government gets away with this, who knows? They could ban another scholar working on other issues. I agree with Sean that they cannot just push this to the side. This will become a bigger issue in their relationship with us, the United States, and also with the rest of the world.
So, since you said, Mr. Turkel, that you were privy to some of the conversation with the Kazakhs about these sort of issues like religious freedom and also, rights of the ethnic minorities, and including Uyghurs and ethnic Kazakhs from China who are already in Kazakhstan. So when you raise this question, the type of question that you are raising here to Kazakh authorities when you meet them, what kind of explanation they give to you behind the type of pressure that they are putting on those activists?
In general, especially after the issuance of publishing of the annual reports by the State Department and by us, oftentimes the reaction that we get is that, you don't know what you're talking about, you have the wrong information, our country has no problem. But in the specific discussions on the specific issues, I have to give a credit to a few Central Asian governments. They do acknowledge that there are issues. They do acknowledge that they're trying to make it right. Prisoners of religious conscience and political prisoners. And also in the Kazakhstan case, specifically the refugees, the Kazakh expats. And if they're providing enough information, enough assistance, and if the Kazakhs and others have been looking to have an independent security policy separated from what the Chinese have been telling them. particularly on the Uyghur issues.
Okay, but they do
so on some aspect they're making progress, but we have not seen the type of progress that we would like to see.
That's what I was wondering. I mean, they do acknowledge, which is a good thing, but then when they go back to Astana, Nur Sultan, and they repeat the same thing. I mean, just you know, Gina's case just happened like last week, and it looks like, you know, there is a kind of a disconnect between what they say to you and what they do in practice back in the country.
Right. I think that the main culprit here that everyone should be recognized, including the officials, the policymakers in these countries, that you know, the status quo is untenable. They need to get out of that SEO manipulation by Chinese, particularly. Mm-hmm. They need to have their independent foreign policy, independent bilateral relationship. And now they have an opportunity. Because of the debacle in Afghanistan, the United States is looking for partnership with the Central Asian countries. And they need to prove that they can be a reliable partner.
Interesting. Also, we were very much focused on Kazakhstan, but there's another country to be discussed in this conversation. You know, what one of them is Tajikistan. Bruce, you earlier written about this topic, so that's why let me bring you in here. In fact, it looks like Tajikistan might be cooperating with China to deport some of the Uyghurs back to harm's way to China. Even my feeling from some other sources were like maybe along with a couple of other countries, of course, not only Tajikistan here, along with some other countries, Tajikistan might have turned into hub of one of those places, one of those destinations where this deportation business takes place. Like people are brought into Tajikistan and from Tajikistan deported to China. So, of course, some of these information came out, revealed from the recent ICC case. So tell us about what has been happening there in Tajikistan.
Yeah, well, that ICC document, the ICC documents were really amazing to even look at. You know, you're right. I mean, Tajikistan seems to be playing a part in extraordinary rendition of Uyghurs coming. They mentioned Turkey, but, you know, the United Arab Emirates is another one that I've heard of, too, that's getting through. And it's not, you know, it shows how devious is probably not the word, but certainly methodical some of this stuff is, and well thought out by the Chinese government, that they, you know, supposedly these groups of people that end up getting sent to Tajikistan as the last stop before they're sent back to China, Xinjiang, I imagine, you know, they're doing it in small groups to try not to attract attention, right? So it's, you know, five people, seven people or something. And really, a lot of this stuff was so well hidden that it was just because some people on planes coming from Turkey noticed these groups of, you know, three, four, five Uyghurs and filmed them with mobile phones and everything and told media like our Tajik service, for instance, that they'd seen these people. You know, but this had been concealed, or at least they've attempted to conceal it for a long time. It raises a lot of questions about what some of the other countries in Central Asia, what their role might be with this, too. You know, Tajikistan got caught, but you have to wonder if somebody else is involved in this, too. But beyond that, you know, just the fact that according to the information from ICC, you know, there was 3,000 Uyghurs that had been living in Tajikistan for many years. And the population is down to 100, and most of them had left within a period of like 2016 to 2018, sent back to China. So, I mean, we know that the Tajik government owes China a lot of money, and that China has a real strong influence over Tajikistan at the moment. But one, their role in extraordinary rendition is horrifying enough. But the fact that they're willing to give over people who have been living in their own country for, you know, 20 years or something based on simply China requesting that they hand them over, you know, is even more chilling.
Wow. And also, maybe, Sean, you would like to jump in here. I mean, I'm also worried at this stage about the fate of ethnic Uyghurs in Afghanistan, given the fact that China is flirting with the Taliban these days. And I mean, I don't know what's the number of ethnic Uyghurs or any ethnic minorities from China in Afghanistan is, but that's what, you know, keeps me awake at night these days. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I've heard different estimates between 2,000 and 3,000 Uyghurs in Afghanistan. A lot of them came a long time ago. They've been long-term residents of Afghanistan.
Is that going to make any difference? I don't know.
Well, yes, that's a big question, right? So we have to remember that a lot of what's happening to Uyghurs and Kazakhs and other ethnic minorities in the Uyghur region of China is happening because the Chinese government is suggesting that it faces a massive and existential terrorist threat from Uyghurs. And that was originally alleged to be from Afghanistan. And the Central Asian states in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, fed that narrative. They extradited a lot of Uyghurs, suggesting that they were terrorists or extremists or separatists from Central Asia back to China. And this has been front and center in a lot of the media discussion about China's engagement with the Taliban, is that they may essentially give over Uyghurs to China to win favor with Beijing. And I've done some research on this from the late 90s and early 2000s. The Chinese Foreign Ministry entered into agreements with the Taliban back then, as early as 1999. And it does seem, the evidence shows, that the Taliban ensured that there was no sort of Uyghur political or militant movement on Afghanistan's territory that could threaten China in the late 90s and early 2000s. So, you know, there's no reason to believe that the Taliban would not do this again. And in some ways, you know, there are a very small number of Uyghur jihadists who are aligned with the Taliban, or at least with Al-Qaeda, and fought with the Pakistan Taliban in Waziristan. You know, the Taliban might be less likely to hand over those people to China and more likely to hand over long-term Uyghur residents of Afghanistan, suggesting that they are, in fact, the terrorists and send those people to, you know, unknown fate.
Yeah, we need to move on. So why Central Asian governments are doing this? What role behind the door China might be playing to make the authorities in Central Asia do what they are apparently doing? How can this be stopped? Is there any way members of those ethnic minorities in Central Asia can avoid being deported to China? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Nuri Turkel, Commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Dr. Sean Roberts, a George Washington University professor and the author of The War on Uyghurs, China's Internal Campaign Against a Muslim Minority, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owasi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing a growing pressure on Uyghurs and ethnic minorities from China who fled to Central Asia. Okay. Yeah, feel free, anyone who wants to jump in here. So let me start the second part of the conversation with Genius Project. So Genius Project, of course, all of you spoken about the project warmly. So, you know, if because of this decision, if Genius Project stops, who's going to benefit from this? I mean, obviously, China, I understand. On the same token, why countries like Tajikistan are doing this? I mean, what role China might be playing behind this? Commissioner Turkel, do you want to take this question?
Before I comment on that, I'd like to add a couple of thoughts on the Taliban-China connection.
Okay.
It's mind-boggling that we're back to where we were 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is the type of the commentators and media organizations already hyping up the China's terrorism concerns. And now with the close relationship that China is fostering with Taliban, I worry about two things. One, it will potentially hamper the efforts put forth by both Trump administration and Biden administration to address the ongoing genocide. In the last 3-4 weeks, there's nothing in public being said about the ongoing genocide. And then two, the United States may be convinced, as the way that the Bush administration was post 9/11, that China could help by using its relationship with the close relationship with Pakistan and Taliban to address potential security concerns that the United States might have down the road. So these kind of things are not really going to help. And also I worry, this is something that I'm very passionate about in addition to what I do at USERF, which is the spread of Chinese digital authoritarianism, which is already metastasizing and being accepted, adopted, and the process of being adopted by over 86 countries so far. And Taliban regime will use that very technology to monitor not only the Uyghurs and others in the country. So there are a lot of worrying trends, developments just taking place, unfolding in the last 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's one. And then the why do they do that? I think this, I invite people to read Sean's book. It gives a really good overview of the background. In the mid-90s, how China is concerned about potential armed resistance against the Chinese state, and how important that the SEO has become a vehicle for both China and Russia to extend its influence by using these weak new countries. Hmm. So this is an ongoing. So if you ask me why, the short answer is that China's influence, China's money, China's global ambition, and the nature of those kind of lingering political social status in these neighboring countries. So it could be a variety of reasons. So the main culprit is Beijing.
Yeah, that's what we think, right? I mean, if Gene is not allowed to come back to Kazakhstan, there has to be a connection to China. And if Belash's case, for example, there's a Chinese connection, and the fact that Tajikistan is deporting Uyghurs back to China, it has to be because the pressure that they are getting from China. So, you know, how does pressure, I mean, you have this big picture view, Commissioner Turkel. I mean, how does pressure sound like? What are those pressure points that China applies when they press these central Asian authorities to do Beijing's bidding on that?
Former Australian foreign policy advisor to Prime Minister John Garnaut invented this 3C, corrupt, corrosive, coercive influence operations by the Chinese. You can see all three in Central Asia. So it's corrupt, it's coercive, and it's corrosive. Mm. They use all the means that they can to pressure. I think Gene's, the current decision by the Kazakh government may have something to do with the growing call to hold the Chinese to account through domestic courts, even through the ongoing Uyghur tribunal. It just started today in London. Gene's organization or effort, the victims database, provided firsthand information that could be used in the accountability process. Right. There have been discussion here at home and abroad. Since ICC is not going to be helpful, so is ICJ. So what do we do? Do we hold the Chinese perpetrators to account through the domestic courts? Or do we need to set up something special? But this, at the end of the day, the evidence that Gene and his supporters were able to put together is so valuable.
Right, right. So we were focused on Tajikistan and Kazakhstan in this case. What about other countries in Central Asia, about the developments and events in this context in the rest of Central Asia, in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, for instance?
You know, like I said about Tajikistan, that, you know, their involvement in extraordinary renditions only came to light by chance. People had, you know, noticed these Uyghurs being on planes and stuff. So they got caught. But you have to wonder, you know, if this hasn't been going on in other Central Asian states. Now, we know that Turkmenistan's airport's been closed down for a long time, but Turkmenistan is in a similar situation with China that Tajikistan is, you know, for lack of a better term, China is Tajikistan's sugar daddy, right? You know, when they need money for anything, they know that China will give them money. And Turkmenistan is in a similar situation. They owe China huge amounts of money for developing fields and building pipelines and you know, and investing in projects that no one else would invest in. But, you know, the Turkmenistan, the nature of the regime in Turkmenistan is such that this would be a great place to funnel people through from, you know, Turkey or something on the way back to China. You know, there is no evidence for that, but Turkmenistan is an opaque country. It's hard to see in what's going on. Gene himself was denied entry into Uzbekistan twice in the last years, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So it shows that Uzbekistan didn't want him either. Dependence upon China varies from country to country. I mentioned Tajikistan and Turkmenistan are probably the extreme. You know, they really, if it wasn't for Chinese money, they would have huge problems. Mm. Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, I suppose, is pretty not quite the same boat as Tajikistan or Turkmenistan, although they owe China a lot of money, but it's a more open society. It would be harder to get away with something like this. Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, while they might owe China money, you know, they're probably both in better shape where they could actually pay it. if they needed to, especially Kazakhstan. And I think Kazakhstan is, that's our window into this whole thing. I imagine a lot of what's happened in Kazakhstan is the same sentiment that is widespread in all the other Central Asian countries. I mean, we see the anti-Chinese sentiment that's growing. You know, anyone that reads just, you know, casually news out of Kazakhstan wouldn't be aware of this fact that there's 55 Chinese factories because they protest against these factories all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so Gene's work, you know, just add fuel to the fire of people who are already worried, you know, spreading concerns about Chinese influence in the region. I'm with those people too, because I've always been surprised that the Central Asians take this view. But China's right next door and they're oppressing their own Muslims. And at the same time, of course, every now and then a Chinese newspaper or, you know, there's been incidents where school textbooks are released with maps showing parts of Central Asia, you know, that belonged to the Chinese Empire 2,000 years ago or something, right? Yeah. You know, that should make all the governments in the region really nervous about what's going on. And if they look at what's happening to the Muslims in Xinjiang, they should be even more nervous about what their future looks like.
I just wanted to jump on Bruce's comment. I think it's not only the fact that China's repressing its own Muslims, but it's actually attacking Central Asian culture. You know, kind of at the core of China's campaign with regards to Uyghurs and Kazakhs and others in the Uyghur region is really a concern about their identification with a larger Central Asian culture they want to obliterate. And so I think that makes it very concerning to the Central Asian states. And the Central Asian states have, you know, since the 90s, I'd say the late 90s, there was kind of a decision to more or less sell the Uyghur people out. You know, I was doing field work in Kazakhstan at the time. In the early 90s, Kazakhstan authorities were very sympathetic regarding the plight of the Uyghurs. And after the Shanghai Five essentially morphed into this Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a lot of deals were made that essentially resulted in selling the Uyghur people out, starting to extradite people, repressing any and suppressing any kind of political activity in Kazakh territory with regards to the Uyghur region of China.
Wow. Okay, if I could add something really quick. When those Turkic states about to declare independence, I was a college student in China. I remember that we were exuberant that there will be independent countries in our backyard for people who are related to us culturally. It was very, very exciting, a festive type of situation for college students in the early 90s and mid 90s. And now, if I could share the disappointment, some Uyghurs even don't want to mention the name of those countries. It's how depressing. And Shana's right that everything that they're doing is against, you know, the very value of Central Asian people, hospitality, family, the, you know, willingness to help. So this is all against what people of Central Asia cherish and value. So this is not only political issue, this will be a huge cultural issue down the road. The Uyghur people are deeply depressed, disappointed. This started when the Uyghur community leaders were assassinated in Bishkek, in Uzbekistan. The Kazakhstan was relatively relaxed, but this has been, and now we added Turkey into the pile. The case that Bruce was citing initially claimed to be a mistake by the Turkish authorities that Zinat Gul, the refugee, been, you know, she's gone, she's disappeared. So this is only getting worse. So I urge the listeners to talk more about these issues. This is going to get more complicated. Now some people think, oh, U.S. is gone, but we have a much, much bigger issue, which is coming from Beijing.
So speaking of people talking about this issue, Bruce, maybe you would like to jump in here. So in the face of all this intensified pressure on those relatives, per se, from Central Asian perspective, against those relatives who are seeking shelter, who are escaping persecution in China, you know, seeking shelter in Central Asia, this pressure by their own local authorities in Kazakhstan, what's the reaction of local people against this practice, against their own authorities? I mean, we see whenever there is a discussion like there was a land reform in Kazakhstan a couple of years ago in which people thought, okay, you know, this land reform is going to mean that China is going to come and buy our land. So there was a huge protest against China in that case. Other than that, I mean, this continued persecution that we see of those ethnic minorities who have seeking shelter in Central Asia, who skipped persecution in China. How the local people in Kazakhstan and some other countries see this growing pressure by their own local authorities against those innocent people there?
You know, I mean, Kazakhstan is it might actually be the extreme example in Central Asia. I don't know. The anti-Chinese sentiment, at least it gets reported on a lot, and we see it, you know, even outside Kazakhstan. You see the protests, and you see the problems that Chinese influence is creating amongst the Kazakh peoples of Kazakhstan, where that the Chinese do have the kind of influence they have. They don't like the fact that their government doesn't seem willing or able to stand up to anything that the Chinese want to do. We get a little of that from Kyrgyzstan too. And they've had problems, you know, again and again. And really, like an example of Chinese workers in Central Asia, this is one that goes with all three of the states that border China. They've had problems with locals and the Chinese workers, you know, in every one of the countries where fights break out or something. And it's interesting to see the authorities' reaction. Even if their own people are the ones that started these fights or something like that, they're real reluctant to, certainly to put their own people in jail. Or, you know, or fine them or something like that. It usually ends up with one, maybe half a dozen of the Chinese workers being sent out of the country or something like that. And, you know, stern lectures to the locals about not doing this again. But you can see that there's already problems being created there. And the fact that the Chinese seem to get, you know, all the contracts that any of the big contracts. I mean, just today, for instance, they awarded a contract in Kyrgyzstan to a Chinese company to build the north-south road that runs through the eastern side of the country. That's no surprise. I don't know if anyone else was even bidding for it, to tell you the truth. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that people see all the time. Too often when there's a big project, it's the Chinese company that gets it. You know, they're resentful for that. All kinds of rumors go around about, you know, the Chinese workers are being paid more money than we are for the same work. You know, the Chinese taking away the young women of the country and, you know, they're being married off to Chinese or something, which there probably has happened in some cases, but certainly not as much as rumor would suggest. But it's a bad situation out there because people are willing to believe anything bad they hear about China, you know, at least in Kazakhstan. And I'll just leave it with one more thing. That's why you have this big problem. But, you know, there are some ethnic Kazakhs that escape from Xinjiang. They have temporary refugee status. But what I've been wondering about lately, and I know that there's the pandemic on everything like that, but there was, for a while, ethnic Kazakhs were able to get across into Kazakhstan. I mean, it didn't happen very often, but you get reports. But that just stopped for the last couple of years now. I don't know if that's because the border is so much more tightly sealed that you can't get across, or if that's because if people like that do get across, Kazakh authorities do whatever they can to get them back into China as fast as possible. But there was a very small but steady stream of ethnic Kazakhs that were escaping from Xinjiang and coming into Kazakhstan, and then it just stopped. That's also something that I found, you know, I've been looking to see if anyone else has gotten in, but it's been, you know, 2 years anyway since anyone got across that border into Kazakhstan.
Very, very interesting. I know we need to wrap up the conversation here. Just one or two points here. I mean, of course, I'm going to skip this question, but I will mention it, what I had in mind as a follow-up to you, Bruce. Like, you know, all these growing resentment in Central Asia against growing influence of China there, and also the treatment of those ethnic Kazakhs that have come from China or Uyghurs there, the treatment of them by the local authorities. I mean, how come, despite all these visible kind of resentment by the locals, is this issue not becoming an election matter in those countries? I mean, in Kazakhstan, yeah, kind of you don't expect to be like a heated debates there when there is an election. But yeah, countries like Kyrgyzstan, where you could relatively have open kind of dialogue about issues there when it's election time. But how come this issue is not turning an election matter? Maybe this is a question for some other conversation here, since we need to wrap the conversation. But one more point, in the face of all this, is Central Asia is still a place that those persecuted people in China, Uyghurs and ethnic Kazakhs, should seek shelter? I mean, what the future holds for those people who are already in Central Asia? Let me put it in this way. Sean, maybe you would like to jump in here.
Sure. I mean, I think that in many ways, Central Asia stopped being a destination for Uyghurs and other repressed minorities from Xinjiang. I mean, ethnic Kazakh population was an exception because the Kazakhs state had a program sponsoring their arrival in Kazakhstan. But Uyghurs throughout the 1990s would frequently come to Central Asia and then often try to get to countries beyond for refugee status. But beginning in around 1998-99, that became less tenable. And that's why when you saw a massive exodus of people from the Uyghur region over the last 8 years, I'd say maybe 10 years, that went through Southeast Asia because, you know, I mean, which seems a very surreptitious route. But the feeling, I think, was that it was not safe to go to Central Asia. And that includes, you know, all the Central Asian states that you're concerned with, and also Pakistan, which was another destination. So I think in many ways that's the case. I do want to add that I think this puts Kazakhstan into a particularly difficult position. As I mentioned before, Kazakhstan has always tried to have this multi-vector foreign policy. And one of the things that the present situation brings up to me is whether that's possible in today's world, as we're seeing kind of a shifting geopolitical terrain, and it's becoming much more difficult to be both close to China and close to the U.S. and Europe. That puts Kazakhstan and its general kind of MO for foreign policy in a very difficult position between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm. And the future of those who are already in Central Asia, what the future holds for those Uyghurs, those ethnic Kazakhs?
Well, can Central Asia be their home? There are lots of Uyghurs who have long been residents of Kazakhstan. Is the largest Uyghur diaspora in the world outside of China. And those people basically just have to be silent. But I think in terms of anybody who has come in recent years, I would be surprised if there's many left who aren't ethnic Kazakhs, because I think that the majority of them would have already been sent back to China.
So what to do about this? Like, you know, we see mostly this group of elderly women tirelessly spending their days and nights in front of the UN offices in Almaty and other major cities in Kazakhstan, I guess, holding the portraits of people who gone missing in China for no avail. I mean, Commissioner Sterkel, is this kind of action helps at all? I mean, UN seems to be kind of careless about this issue. I've not seen any major discussion taking place there, despite those kind of minor actions in front of their office in Almaty. Is it even helping?
It has not been that helpful. The UN is becoming even weaker in light of the fact that China funds big chunk of UN operations. Chinese representatives have been very aggressive in their operations within the UN system. So what the countries could do outside of UN is to put in make a new process to provide humanitarian assistance. Sweden publicly stated that there will be a refugee status given to the Uyghurs if they can manage to reach the country. Yeah. Germany made a pledge that no Uyghur asylum seekers will be sent back. The United States is contemplating ways in which both Uyghur asylum seekers in the country and elsewhere could be allowed to settle down in the United States as a political refugee. The Congress has been also deliberating a legislation to address this very issue. So if the bilateral, multilateral approach is difficult, if the China concern is too big of a headache for various countries, that at least that they should provide humanitarian assistance. In the cases of Turkey and Central Asia, if they're not willing to keep these men and women in the country, that they should at least allow UNHCR to conduct its vetting process.
But it's not going to help to those like millions of Uyghurs and ethnic Kazakhs who are already in China and going through this hell. I mean, how you can help to them? I mean, is this humanitarian gesture is going to help them anyway?
Unlike the other genocidal situation or genocides that we have witnessed, China does not allow the Uyghurs to leave. They are been subject to passport control, passport application denials in the past. So they'd rather keep everyone there to make them feel suffocated. Or become a compliant and being a subject to this human re-engineering project that China's been undertaking. But what I was suggesting is the assistant type of humanitarian assistance that can be provided to those Uyghurs who are already outside of the country. Mm-hmm. There's a sizable refugee population in Turkey. The Turkish government is also getting lots of pressure. Erdogan government is not being very helpful in some instance, but he's not deporting Uyghurs in large numbers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the Turkish government is also looking other countries in Europe and elsewhere mm-hmm. to take some of those refugees. So mm-hmm. there has to be a coordinated effort around the world. It's very unfortunate that our government's attention has been diverted to other issues, but this was some of the things, some of the measures that was actively deliberated before the recent events in Central Asia.
Right, right. And also, since Bruce, you brought up this in your writing earlier about the ICC case and in the case of Tajikistan deporting those ethnic minorities from China, Uyghurs especially, this kind of cases like ICC case filing, is this something can stop this? I don't know if you have any thoughts about this. I mean, did this in any way stop what has been happening in Tajikistan so far? I mean, the fact that this case was brought in to ICC.
Yeah, I mean, that would assume that China was willing to abide by whatever decisions the ICC came up with. And I can't imagine that happening, really, to tell you the truth. You know, I think in Tajikistan's case, and they might be unique in this, you know, they're not to mix politics, but, you know, the global chessboard and everything like that, they can't appreciate Beijing's policy toward the Taliban. You know, and I think that is going to give the government in Tajikistan reason to really reconsider some of their relationship with China. China has been by far the biggest major power supporting the Taliban government and trying to say that they might not be that bad and, you know, and everything, you can do business with them, which is not Tajikistan's view at all. So this is going to cause a rift. It'd be interesting to see how much Tajikistan is willing to cooperate in some of these, like, you know, the extraordinary rendition or something like that. So that might end up. But, you know, again, China has never indicated that they get condemned by all kinds of international groups and individual governments. And they shrug that off, you know, every single time. And since they're a permanent member of the Security Council, you can't vote. Russia would go along with China, too. They would block anything that would come up that would, you know, put sanctions on them for something or the other. So all you can do is put sanctions on that are unilateral or within the framework of some other organization in the West or something like that. But like I said, China can just shrug that off. They don't feel answerable to any other authority outside the country.
And along those lines, I think, you know, it's important to understand that the only thing that can stop the repression that's happening inside the Uyghur region is China's government itself, right? So I think, you know, to Bruce's point, there's no international mechanism to stop a major power from doing horrible things to their citizens. We invest a lot in that, but the truth is that usually doesn't happen until after the damage has been done. There might be some kind of retribution. But in this case, I think what needs to happen is there needs to be concerted pressure, particularly economically, you know, from the grassroots on boycotting Chinese products, protesting the Olympics, so that people inside China start to realize that what it's doing to the Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other Turkic Muslims in the Uyghur region is not in their best interest.
Okay. It's been really a fascinating conversation, and I hope we will continue talking about this issue going forward, but I think we are way over time with this. Let's end the conversation, this conversation right here. Thank you very much, Dr. Sean Roberts, George Washington University professor and the author of The War on Uyghurs, China's Internal Campaign Against a Muslim Minority. And also big thanks goes to Nuri Turkel, Commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlog Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. Until next week, bye-bye.